welcome you into another edition of Gateway to Baseball Heaven, the final edition for June as we almost wrap another month of Cardinal baseball and basically have no idea where we stand. So this is going to be fun. I'm your host, Daniel Shoptaw, C70 at the bat, at C70 on Twitter, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Tara Wellman, who you find at Bird Seeds and Birds on the Black and all these other places, and you also find her on Twitter at Tara Wellman. And Tara, we were talking before the show about how this team is just kind of confounding, because if we record this, well, on Friday night, like I did with Meet Me at Mutual, it's a whole lot of angst and you know, what is going on? And then they go into more, they split this series with Milwaukee, and it's like, what team is this?
Yeah, and it's weird because, I don't know, I feel like there were times last season where, even as a lifelong Cardinals fan, I was almost hoping that they would go on a long losing streak just to sort of prove a point that they weren't actually very good. And I felt like coming into this, well, really after that first game with the Brewers, I was in that same boat with this team as far as kind of what they've shown us in the last couple of weeks, playing against teams that they should have been better against. Because really what we're seeing is that this team is incapable of any sort of sustained winning streak because of how many flaws there are in, you know, the whole system. And a lot of that has to do with injuries, and I understand that. A lot of that has to do with the bullpen in flux pretty much from day one. But a large portion of that has to do with the offense that just has yet to really start clicking. And, you know, as cliche as that sounds, you hear guys say it all the time after games, we just haven't started clicking yet. We're just not really clicking yet. And that's great, but, you know, it's not April anymore. So you'd like to start to see some signs of life, even if it isn't all there at once. And, you know, when you have a starting pitcher that strikes out 13 and gives up one run, you should probably win that game, and they didn't. So I was sort of in that same boat, you know, after that first game of the Brewers series, where I felt like if the Cardinals would just go ahead and lose five in a row, then maybe they'd make some changes, or at least, you know, come to a point where they kind of were in at the fork in the road, and they had to make a decision about where they wanted this team to go, whether they wanted them to compete this year or if they wanted to sort of just be honest and transparent about the fact that they're not going to go all in this year. They're going to wait it out. They're going to try to win as many games as they can, but not, you know, not go after a sustained postseason appearance this year for the sake of what they have planned in the future. That's not the way that the John Mozeliak era Cardinals do business. So I think it would take a sustained losing streak before they would make any sort of public acknowledgement of a direction. And we got to this point last year where we kind of just said, you know, pick something, pick a direction and go that way, whether it's this sort of soft rebuild or if it's competing for a postseason run, but just pick something. And this sort of lose three games, win two, lose a game, win three, lose two games, win three games kind of thing doesn't give the Cardinals any sort of ultimatum as far as having to pick a direction. They can sort of just tread water and float along and hope that somewhere along the line the offense does start clicking and the injuries do stop and, you know, all of those things that have gone wrong suddenly start to go right, because they're close enough to not jump ship. And that's almost a problem with a team that has as many issues as this one does.
Yeah, this is true. I mean, again, you looked at this series and, you know, we're sitting Friday after losing the first two and you look at what's coming up and you say, you know, if they lose, if they get swept here, they're, you know, 8.5 out of the division, and you can kind of write off the division to that one, because Milwaukee is good. Milwaukee may fade at some point in time, but you also got to figure they're going to probably try to shore up their team a little bit at the trade deadline. Their bullpen is very good. Their offense is fairly solid. There's not as many holes in this Milwaukee team as there are in the future. Now, I'm not saying they're going to win the division, but if you get 8.5 games behind them, you're probably not going to catch them, especially when you've played a lot. I mean, I was flabbergasted to hear on the radio today, but it made sense, that they're done in Miller Park for this year. I mean, they have been there three times already, plus they've already played Milwaukee at least once in Busch, so that's, you know, four of the six series you're going to... You don't have any games head-to-head against them, so you get down like that, you're in trouble. And, you know, to their credit, they didn't. They bounced back, and we see things that can get you excited. You look at this bullpen now, and you see a resurgence in Greg Holland, which we probably will get to a little bit later on to see how he's pitched this week. But you look at him, and of course you've got Hicks and Norris, and you start saying, well, you know, Brebbia's pitching well, and Gomber looks good, especially in certain situations, and Tui can be an interesting thing, and Mike Myers can come in and throw heat. And, you know, we've talked about it all year, that this bullpen should be a strength, and now it's starting to look like it could be. So you say, okay, there's that, and, you know, then you have to worry about the starting pitching, and you worry about the offense, but at least there's one part that's working, which is more than we could say about the team at the beginning of the week, it felt like. So you're right, it's that tantalizing, they can be this good, they can be a team that can make a run, they can be a team that if you can find the right move, can plug in to at least be a wild card contender, and maybe still in the race for the division. But then the other part of you says, you'd almost lay even money that they're going to lose two out of three to Cleveland coming up, and maybe struggle against the Braves, and we're going to be back in the same situation of treading water. And you're right. I don't know how many years we've said this. Pick a direction, you know.
Yeah.
Win some games, lose some games, but this lukewarm stuff is not much fun for us because it's amplified by the exposure we have to the team and the social media, but this roller coaster of, you know, everybody's really happy. Well, not everybody, but a lot of people are really happy today that are going to be really, really mad tomorrow if they lose, you know, and you go back up and down. It would be nice to just find a level and stay there for a while. But it's hard to see that, because you're right, this team does not like to make moves if they don't have to. And right now they don't have to.
Yeah. You know, I think I used this phrase so much last year that everyone probably got sick of hearing it, but it's almost like they're close enough, but not actually close enough.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a weird position to be in, because if you were to get on a run where you reel off 6, 7, 8 in a row, all of a sudden you're looking at a very competitive team. The problem is then if you lose 3 or 4 in a row, you're right back to where you started. So you're not really gaining a whole lot of ground. Then the issue with this year's team is that they have not been able to create any sort of longer streaks. And it seems like, you know, I haven't really done a whole lot of homework to put numbers to this, but it seems like most really good teams put together some sort of winning streak on multiple occasions throughout the year that's more than just, you know, 3 or 4 games. And the Cardinals have yet to do that. And I think it's because they'll have a game like they had today where it seemed like every phase of the game was working well. But that's one game out of 7. And then the rest of the time, they're scrapping and clawing and desperately trying to hold on to wins or desperately trying to drive in 1 or 2 runs to support their pitching staff. Or they're, you know, dealing with some of those injuries to particularly the pitchers that have just made everything with that staff so in flux. So it's hard to get on any kind of roll, and I get that with the way that the season has gone. But it does make it very... very frustrating as a fan of this team to see them be close enough to competitive that you think, okay, if the organization would buy in a little bit, or if they would make some changes, or if there was a little more energy from the management, from the coaching staff, I mean, something to just push these guys over that hump, then, you know, maybe you buy in a little bit. But right now, it's even after the way they finished the series in Milwaukee, still pretty hard to buy in to that being what this Cardinals team will continue to be.
Now, if you want to be positive, which we try to be oftentimes, somebody put out on Twitter today, I think it was Austin Insor, I'm finding the tweet, at least that's the person I saw that tweeted it out. They're 25-16 against the NL Central, which, hey, yeah, that's 9-1 against the Reds. We get
thanks,
that.
Reds.
Yeah. But, you know, it says by comparison, the Brewers are 17-18. The Cubs are 19-18. We just saw the Cubs get swept by the Reds. They've lost, what, 6 of 8 against the Reds this year, or something like that. The Brewers have got some Reds wins in there, too. I imagine. I haven't looked at their schedule, but I would think. That number is padded by the Reds, but it's also a fairly representative number. The Cardinals are playing well inside the division. You know, they have the season edge on the Cubs. They're kind of, I think they're a little bit under 500 against the Brewers, but it's a close matchup. So you'd like to think that that pays off at some point in time. That being said, it'd be also nice to win some games outside of the division since we don't play anybody in the division for the next 2 or 3 weeks. But, so, you know, maybe. I mean, there are reasons to be optimistic. There are reasons to think this team can do something. But, again, it's fool me once, shame on me. Fool me twice, shame on you. And we've had this for 3 or 4 years. It's very, very difficult to grab a hold of it. And this is not tying this to – I'm not really tying this to management or front office or even a player. It's just – it's all some sort of all combination. There's no one thing that we can point to. As much as people like to point to Mike Matheny, there are issues there, but that's not the whole reason this team is losing.
No, it's not. I mean, you know, it's we're kind of back in that same position we have been the last several years where, you know, you can't trade the whole roster. So what can you change? And that seems to always land back on the shoulders of the manager. And I think this isn't new. This isn't a shocking revelation, but it seems like when the team is in a funk like it is right now, this particular manager doesn't seem to know what to do about it. Which is odd considering what his strengths tend to be portrayed as, that there isn't some sort of gear that he can flip into that's a little more motivating as opposed to a lot more passive. See Tommy Pham getting tossed, and not Mike Matheny following him to the showers. You know, it seems like the best managers learn how to push a few more buttons, or maybe it's a little more aggression. Maybe it's a more, you know, players manager motivational kind of thing. But the best managers often in those winning seasons find a way to at least create a spark. And that's something that this team still doesn't have. They keep changing players. They keep bringing guys in who are supposed to change that. And it doesn't change. It was Dexter Fowler. It didn't really change. It was Marcelo Ozuna. It didn't really change. Now, we always say winning changes a lot of that, and they're not winning. But if there's not that never say die, that energy where they can go from, hey, we want to go out there and just do our best, to, no, we're going to go out there and do everything we can possibly do to win. I don't know that comes from the players with this team. They've tried to do that, and it hasn't worked. So maybe that is where Mike Matheny needs to get out of his comfort zone and, you know, be the source of that spark. And I'm not sure he has the personality to do it.
Yeah, I mean let's talk a little bit about what happened this week, and I think two instances, and again, neither one of us are, you know, adamantly anti-Matheny. Not either one of us are advocating necessarily that he gets fired. Tara is advocating for nobody to lose their jobs. We have to put that in there every time. But after the game on Thursday night, which was probably the most atrocious Cardinal game that we've seen in a long time, when nothing went right and nobody looked like they really deserved to be on the field, you know, Mike Matheny comes out and basically has his normal press conference. I mean, he was a little bit maybe worked up, but he's still that, you know, fairly passive, fairly, you know, we just didn't like the way we played today. Well, you know, great. Nobody else did either. You'd kind of like to see something more than that. And then, you know, the next night, yeah, Tommy Pham, he strikes out looking, goes back, he checks the video, he doesn't like what the video says, he starts talking from the dugout, and the home plate umpire tosses him. Now, again, I think that was over the top for the home plate umpire. I don't think that there was a need for that, or especially without a warning. But Mike Matheny goes out there and he speaks for about a minute, and then he turns around and comes back. And for a team needing a boost, for a team that needs something, you got to feel like your manager has your back, and he just didn't look like that. You know, it feels like we've seen Mike Matheny get tossed out before. And I don't want to say that if it had been a Matt Carpenter or if it had been a, you know, Yadier Molina or somebody like that, he might have been a bit more adamant. But it didn't really matter who it was. He's got to do more than that, doesn't he?
Oh, absolutely. I tweeted after that, essentially, that I thought every Cardinal in the game should try to get tossed at that point. And if Mike Matheny was the last one standing, he should be on the first plane to anywhere else. I did not expect quite the reaction to that I got, but a lot of people evidently found that to be a compelling argument. but no, I saw that happen, and you know, it's one of those things where Mike Matheny getting tossed there probably does nothing for the game itself, but for a team coming off of a loss that many people, the Cardinals included, called embarrassing. You have to do something to change the conversation, to change the dynamic, to change the energy, to let those guys know that embarrassing loss the night before or not, they're out there to win that next day, and that you have their back, and that, you know, when something as egregious as getting tossed in the middle of someone else's at bat for what appeared to be a pretty terrible strike call in Tommy Pham's at bat. I mean, that's the kind of situation that you need to know that your manager is going to go out and fight for you in the first inning of a big game. If there's any time to get riled up about something, that seemed like the prime opportunity. And I realize that it's going to take a lot for Mike Matheny to get thrown out of a game, but it's happened before. He can do it. And that seems to be a situation where, just for the sake of, I don't know, when things are going bad and you're supposed to be a player's manager, it seems like he needed to do something there to prove that point, to you know, bring a little bit of energy to that dugout, and he didn't. He had an opportunity to make a point, and he chose not to.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's just, again, big scheme of things. It doesn't change anything, but it's just kind of that kind of thing you do. If nothing else, it changes the discussion. You know, Tony La Russa was great at picking a fight with the media about the time that his players were, you know, somebody that's really messed up or that had a terrible game. He was pretty good about, you know, getting fired up and getting the focus on him and not the players. And that was more, it was not because he wanted the spotlight. It was to keep the spotlight. Yep. and the questions and the focus off of, you know, bad play by the players. And, you know, that's the same type of thing. I mean, you know, it's defend your guys to some degree. And again, we are not there. We don't know what the clubhouse dynamics are like. But what we see doesn't necessarily look good. Now, again, some of this gets water under the bridge because they win two games in a row, and, you know, now we look like we're nitpicking. But, you know, this is a weekly show, so we're not doing this every day. You got to cover some stuff. But it just didn't have the feel. And again, we see so much out of this team that needs help. I mean, how many times this week did they strike out, you know, 10 or more times?
Too many.
Yeah. How many times this week did Yadier Molina provide basically all the offense? You know, I mean, he's had two multi-homer games in 4 days. I mean, if you're being carried by a 35-year-old catcher, you might want to rethink things a little bit. You've seen so much. You know, again, it's very difficult to invest. It's very difficult for Tomo Zalak, I think, to invest in this team. It's very difficult for us as fans to invest emotionally in this team because it seems like as soon as you do, you get betrayed, Bob.
Yeah, you know, we often talk about Mike Matheny making strange or ill-advised decisions in game and how so many times it ends up working out okay, and that almost reinforces the bad move. So then we see him make that move 7 or 8 more times and it doesn't work out, and you think, well, okay, so because it worked out that one time doesn't mean you have to do it over and over again. That's sort of how this feels, right? Is that the Cardinals kind of got away with a really, really rough week because they were able to end it on a pretty high note, and they played their best game in this series finale with Milwaukee, and they finally looked like a team that you could put your support behind, and that's sort of the lasting memory leaving Milwaukee, which is great. And you know, I'm sure that most people are going to be happier with those two wins than they would have been with two more losses. But at the same time, you know, you almost wish, as a fan of this team, hoping for this direction to be chosen, that, you know, when you don't see Mike Matheny get fired up after this series, this felt, after those first two games in Milwaukee, this felt as desperate as I think the Cardinals have felt in a long time. And that's saying something because last year was not great. So it just felt like there were, no one had answers. No one knew how to fix what was going wrong. And then they somehow come up with two wins and all of a sudden everyone stops talking about what those problems were when those problems haven't really gone away. They just, you know, hid them for a couple of days.
Yeah, it is, I don't know. Again, you know, hopefully, well, I'd say we're not doing a show next week, but hopefully, you know, we're talking in a couple of weeks about the fact that they have picked this direction, that this is a game-changing type of thing, that they're climbing their way up the division. But again, we have to wait and see, because we're not going to buy into a whole lot of changes, a whole lot of belief on this team, I don't think, until we see them do it for an extended period of time, and that just hasn't happened yet. Now, one of the things, and I think we referenced it a little bit earlier, one of the things that is giving a little bit of hope to this is the fact that Greg Holland returned this week, and in grand fashion, kind of this way that we do these things, everybody had completely written off Greg Holland by the time he came back, and by everybody, I pretty much mean to me too, because he had terrible rehab numbers, and he was kind of coming back because he said he'd figured it out, which is part of the course for this team, it feels like, you know, to say one thing and then not have it. And then he comes in and he's thrown 3 straight scoreless innings. He's given up like 1 flare hit, striking out batters, and looking like the Greg Holland that you spend $14 million for. So apparently every once in a while they can find it, and just let you know. Again, maybe this is going to be one of those decisions that reinforces bad decision making, but it's kind of nice to see.
Yeah, you know, it's not always a bad thing to see a poor process create a positive result. Obviously, the jury's still out a little bit, I think, because 3 appearances is far from what you want out of your $14 million closer. But those 3 consecutive good appearances are, I think, more than we've seen out of Greg Holland since they signed him for $14 million, including the rehab appearances, where he really kind of got hit all over the place. So, it's great to see. And it's good to see that not only is he putting up zeros, but he's doing it convincingly. He's doing it with the slider that was pretty much non-existent as far as a strikeout pitch before he went on the DL. He's doing it in a fashion that seems repeatable, not just like it's dumb luck. And he seems to so far to have been you know, confident in whatever the changes are and whatever it is that has made the difference. And, you know, we're not going to say, I'll leave the pitching mechanics breakdown to some of the experts, including, you know, Joe Schwarz and Zach Gifford and, you know, some of those guys that will do an hour long podcast probably just on Greg Holland's pitching mechanics, which I'm sure would be fascinating in its own right, but that's not what I'm gonna, that's not the point I'm trying to make. The point I'm trying to make, and doing so poorly, is that, you know, it's nice to see, the way he's putting up zeros, not just the fact that the result is there at the end of the day, because far too often we've seen guys, you know, even like Trevor Rosenthal, or at times Sungwan Oh, guys who eventually put up a zero, but they kind of, you know, get hit around and put a bunch of guys on base and aren't consistent in the way that they do it. So three appearances or three consecutive good outings is great. I think it's a great start, not necessarily enough that I'm totally sold on what Greg Holland's role can be going forward.
Yeah, I mean, Greg Holland, I'm kind of looking at his game log here. He does have a couple other stretches, even this year. I mean, there were three games he had four games in a row in April. Okay. Where he gave up no runs, although, and he had three games in the beginning of May, but at least in some of those games, he's still walking batter. And I think that's the biggest thing. He has not walked a batter since he got in. And he's given up one flare hit. Now, again, like I said, we've had some stretches. It could be that he comes out next time and lays an egg. But he looks, as you say, looks much more confident, much more dominating than he did. I mean, you know, he had about, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 strikeouts in April. You know, he had, four? You get one today. He got one today. He's had five in the three games since he's been back now. So I mean, I think that's where we're looking at. It's much, much more. Well, he had 10 strikeouts total until this last little stretch. So he's already, you know, gotten half of that in three games. I think that's what we wanted to see. Yep. So again, you put him a healthy and a confident and a guy you can trust. It should relieve a little bit of the burden on Jordan Hicks. It gives you, you know, a little bit of burden relieved on Bud Norris, yeah, whoever Brad Norris is. He's probably pretty happy to not have that burden as well. Yeah. But you've got an end of a bullpen that we're seeing a little bit more cracks in the starting rotation. But if you don't feel like you have to run them through the seventh inning, if you even don't have to run them to the sixth, if they get in trouble. You know, they give you five innings and they're not looking just sharp, you can feel like you can take them out and still be able to handle the game. I mean, I think that's really big, because I don't think we've had that. And that's kind of seen the overuse of Hicks, or you run Jack Flaherty out there for 120 pitches or whatever the case may be. Now, again, this gets into, you know, how is Mike Matheny going to manage this, but it kind of feels like, for the most part, I think he's doing a little bit better over the stretch. And maybe that's Greg Maddux. Why am I doing a show tonight? I can't even get anybody's name right. At least I got the show name right, though.
It's true.
That's better than normal. Yeah. You know, Mike Maddux, maybe it's Mike Maddux's influence is really kind of starting to permeate. But it feels like, at least in times like today, I kind of expected him to leave Luke Weaver in to face Jesus Aguilar, because, you know, if he hits a home run, it's 8-5, and there's still a lead, and it gives him a chance to get through the sixth. And Matheny didn't. He pulled him, and that was the right move. But it's not necessarily the move we would normally see. So, you know, you knock on wood, but then again, we got to see this on a consistent basis. And I think that's everything that we talk about is we want to see this more than just two games in a row.
Yeah, I mean, I think even the process for Mike Matheny, I would agree. I think there have been times this year where we've got gotten to the end of a game and win or lose, I've thought, huh, okay, I can get behind the moves that he made as far as the bullpen is concerned. But then there have been times where he does the same thing that we've seen Mike Matheny do for the last handful of years, and you finish the game shaking your head thinking, how are you the only person on the planet that didn't see that coming? So, you know, I would like to think that Maddux is having a bit of an impact as far as that is concerned. I would like to see him maybe have more of an impact as, you know, the bullpen shores up a little bit. But there have been some times where the right move just didn't work out, and that makes it look, you know, a little bit worse for Mike Matheny than maybe it really was. But I think you're right to your point. If he's more comfortable with the way that that bullpen is structured and the guys he can consistently go to get outs, he's maybe relinquishing a little bit of that I gotta get him through the sixth mentality as far as the starter is concerned. And that's probably a good thing once you're confident in the bullpen. I would not have said that 2 weeks ago because 2 weeks ago, you pretty much needed your starter to go nine if you were planning on, winning that game or having a chance to win it. So, it's, you know, he's had a tough project as far as making the right moves with that bullpen so far this year, but you know, when that's not really your strength anyway, it's a little bit of a little bit more of a struggle than maybe it should be.
Speaking of struggles, I hate to end on this, but it probably is a concerning thing. Carlos Martinez pitched this week. He pitched in that game that was so ugly that we expected Mike Matheny to blow up. And he pitched unlike the Carlos Martinez that we're used to. For the fourth straight game, he did not walk the ballpark like he had the last three, but you almost kind of wish he had, because the balls that he put in the strike zone were hit very, very hard. And defense did not help him. But that's four straight starts for Carlos that just don't look right. And he's going up against Corey Kluber, on Tuesday in a game that you would like to think is a classic pitcher's duel that, you know, everybody's going to strike out 100 times, but it's the confidence in Carlos right now has got to be really low. And I don't, we've had this whole discussion about injuries and stuff. I hate to think that after all this talk, he's still hiding an injury.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I just finished recording a series preview that'll go up tomorrow, and that was my comment about this matchup as well, is that, you know, you see it on paper, and I went, oh, man, this should be so good, but I'm worried because of how Carlos has looked really since he came back off of that DL stint. And I think that's what lends itself to the idea that he may not be 100% healthy. I think the comment that he made after that initial start about being worried to throw at his full capacity because he was afraid to either re-injure or re-aggravate something, you know, that had a lot of people, myself included, a little worried that he may not still be, quote, injured, but that he wasn't confident enough in the condition of his arm to really go out and focus on pitching, not on not hurting himself. So I don't know. It's been strange. It's been very evident that his sort of hyper focus when Carlos Martinez is in the zone mentality hasn't been there. To be fair, his stuff hasn't really been like that either. So, you know, kind of chicken or the egg argument, which comes first. But he hasn't been right since he came back from the DL. And I wasn't surprised by that because he seems to be the kind of pitcher that takes a little while to get locked in. We saw that at the beginning of the year. We certainly saw it in spring training. But, you know, whatever it is seems to have him I don't know, maybe distracted just enough that he hasn't been able to really get locked in. So if he can be that guy, if he can sort of flip that switch and go back to the Carlos Martinez he was before he hit the DL, that could be a really fun game to watch. Otherwise, it could be pretty disappointing just because, you know, on paper it should be so good.
Yeah, and it's one of those, I mean, again, it's baseball, you never know, but for the most part, you feel like your only chance to win that game is if there's a real Carlos Martinez.
Right.
Because, you know, Cleveland's a pretty good team, and Kluber's not going to allow much. So if Carlos Martinez comes out and keeps the game close, then maybe you've got a chance. But if he comes out and pitches like he has the last four games, it's one of those that you can turn the game off early because it's done
yeah.
First quarter of the game, not anyway. So I don't know. I do worry a little bit about that, and I'm wondering. I mean, again, maybe our pitching experts will get into them and see if there's something different. But it's a little disconcerting because I mean, you know, you lose Michael Wacha this week to an oblique injury. You've got Jack Flaherty, who has then kind of stepped up to be this ace, and you still have Miles Michaelis who's pitching well. But again, you don't want to rely on. You don't want Jack Flaherty to be your number one starter. I mean, he hopefully will be someday in the future, or at least right there with Alex Reyes, assuming Alex Reyes ever can have his career like we want him to. But he shouldn't be this year. And if he is, again, then that's an issue that maybe Mo goes out and looks for starting pitching. It just, you know, I think we've talked about it before. I'm much more excited. I really feel like more teams should do like who was the Nationals just got Herrera from the Royals.
Mm-hmm.
Don't wait till, you know, when you get, if you make a deal at the trading deadline, you've got a player for like 2 months. And a lot of times, you know, the divisions can be decided in June, you know, or even before the All-Star break. If you could have some key series, make your moves early, and that's not a Mo thing. It's not really a baseball thing. But I'm surprised that more teams don't try to get more out of their acquisition than just a couple of months, especially when it's like a pitcher and you're not throwing them out there every day.
Yeah, and you never know. You may have a little bit more leverage when you're the only one. You're the only one picking up the phone.
Yeah.
So you got that advantage too when you make a move early. You know, I think for a lot of teams, they maybe are in a position more like the Cardinals are, where they don't quite know which direction they're going this early in the year, so they don't want to make that move too soon. But you know. When your game plan is essentially to never stop competing, even when you're, you know, kind of in a position where I said earlier, in a little bit of a soft rebuild, if you will, you know, you're not at the most competitive, where you feel like you're all in to win a championship. I don't know. You gotta sometimes make that call and take the chance. Now, taking risks is not really a John Mozeliak thing, just in general. And you know that's paid off for him in some instances. But I feel like this is still. He keeps trying to create this perfect Mike Matheny team, and it's just not. It's just not working. So if you can go out and make a move that makes you better, you know, I think it's pretty obvious where the Cardinals' biggest holes are at this point. I think the starting pitching is still very concerning simply because so many things can happen. I mean, you know, a month ago we were talking about, wow, what are the Cardinals going to do when they have six starting pitchers and only five spots? Are they going to go to a six-man rotation? And now we're talking about, like, two guys that are healthy.
Yeah.
And John Gant, who is just like, fine. Just leave me on the major league roster at this point because I'm probably going to pitch again in like 4 days.
Yeah. You know, there's not much point. Why do you put me to Memphis?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, from what I understand, I've been given to understand that it takes two teams to make a trade.
So, I've heard this.
Yeah.
I may have been told that at some point.
Yeah. So, it is easy to say, hey, you make this deal when, the other side may not be ready to do that yet, especially with the wild cards, you never know, and you may also want the other team may want to wait and try to get more people involved too. So
right.
It's easy to say. I realize that, but I still wonder why more teams don't at least try to be a little bit more aggressive about that and make those kind of pushes. But anyway, we're going to have to wait and see what Mo has in store, and that will be a while. Like I said earlier, we will not be recording a show next week. Tara is going to be, well, I guess if she was in, paying job, we would say she was on assignment, but basically yeah. She's just going out to California because she wants to get away from us all. So we won't do one then. We will be back in 2 weeks, to talk about whatever direction, if they've picked one, and what's going on then. So until then, for Tara, I'm Daniel. Good night.
Hey, Cardinals fans. Thanks for listening to this week's show. If you liked what you heard, you can find us on iTunes. Just search Gateway to Baseball Heaven under podcasts and click subscribe. While you're there, feel free to give us 5 of those little gold stars or even a quick review. And tune in next time as we break down another week in baseball heaven.